This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
It's time for our Monday serial, a respectable veneer written by Rachel Doré, published by Upstart Press and narrated by Romy Hooper. This serial has been made possible by funding from the Earl Creativity and Development Trust with collaboration from Manawatu People's Radio. A Respectable Veneer is a story about love and courage, but we remind you of our regular content warning. There are elements of violence and references to child abuse. Dr. Bradshaw tended to Douglas's wound and cautioned Ruby about the effect of shock on Edie. In a violent outburst, Douglas blamed Ruby for Frank's death and stormed out, vowing never to return.
Ah, well, Senior Constable McCaffrey said. Whoever that fellow was, he wasn't from around here. Had the look of a big city sewer rat, he did.
Do you think so?
A sob climbed her chest and wedged thick in her throat. Her eyes were stinging. The weight of water filled the lower lids.
Not now. Tears had to stay where they were, behind the accumulated debris of shame and remorse. Grief, anger, and more guilt were piled on top. This was not the time to release anything.
Mrs. Woods.
McCaffrey's voice was gentle as it reached her. Frank had been put in the back of an ambulance. He might have reached the mortuary by now. She hadn't watched the stretchers being carried out of the yard. There was no guarantee Lou wasn't in there too, next to Frank. They wouldn't do that, would they? They'd have brought a different ambulance, wouldn't they?
Mrs. Woods,
Senior Constable McCaffrey said again.
Could there be anything in the shed he was looking for?
Like what?
She couldn't stop shivering.
An old bike? Tools? The lawnmower? Coal? There's coal. We're out of carbonets. Pine cones from the Boy Scouts. I must get some.
He exchanged glances with the young constable. We'll never know what that bloke was after, will we?
He pocketed his notes, picked up his helmet.
What's the world coming to, eh? Houses and a shop up the road broken into the other night. Money, jewellery, that type of stuff. But this, these things don't happen here. Wellington, Auckland, yes, not here. And Mr. Woods knifed. I never thought.
He placed a leg of ham hand on her shoulder.
I think we've covered it. Frank Pierce was a brave man. The best. Distinguished himself in the war.
He had a look of sadness. Ruby added, feeling sorry for him, to the stack of guilt in her gut.
That bloke was a bad 'un,
McCaffrey said.
No mistaking that. And who's to say it wasn't him responsible for those burglaries? Fingerprints will tell.
Yes, said Ruby.
There'd be no prints. Lou was an expert. Her body began to shake as she recalled the quick glimpse of the flick knife in Lou's gloved fist.
The doc'll see to you and the lass,
McCaffrey said.
Whatever the case, this has been quite straightforward. Bradshaw will write up the paperwork. Nothing for you to worry yourself about, my dear. All very unfortunate. We'll say good evening and see ourselves out.
When Douglas appeared, Edie flew to him before Ruby could stop her. He gently pushed her away.
"Now, now, Miss Edith," said Dr. Bradshaw. "Your daddy will be sore for a while. Mrs. Woods, you've got a brave and sensible little girl there, telephoning me when she did. But you ought to have sent her back to bed."
Edie shrank back, and Ruby remembered the lies she'd told the policeman. The doctor couldn't have told them.
"Your husband must rest," Dr. Bradshaw said. "The sling'll give things a chance to mend until I remove the stitches. Half an inch to the left. Even a small blade like that with enough force behind it could have sliced the tendon and he'd have lost the use of his arm."
Ruby bit the corner of her lip. If she wasn't mistaken, the doctor seemed to puff himself up with a degree of glee. This town was so quiet, so decent, he'd probably longed for a stab wound to patch up. Now he'd had one.
"Other than that," Dr. Bradshaw went on, "there's a cracked rib and a few nasty bruises."
"I'll look after him," said Ruby.
The doctor wagged his finger.
"As for little Miss Edith, a broken sleep and staying up like this won't be doing her any good at all, not to mention what effect your own nervous state might be having on the child."
This assessment landed in Ruby's stomach. Her own nervous state? She'd have to be careful, keep a hold of herself.
"However, children get over things quicker than you think," he added. "There's every chance she'll forget everything that's happened this evening as long as you can put it behind you. I suggest you get things back to normal as soon as possible. Routine's the thing."
"Normal?" Ruby screened her eyes with her lashes. "What did he know?" "Don't worry," she said. "I'll make sure she's all right." Douglas, red-eyed and haggard, shuffled in the doorway.
"As for your husband," Bradshaw went on, "he will need looking after. There's a roll of bandages and a tin of gauze along with a prescription on the table. Rest is what he needs most."
"Why didn't he kill me?" Douglas groaned. "He should have."
"He wouldn't have," said Ruby. There was more she could say. That Lou Watkins was too clever. He did his killing on the quiet, where he could enjoy his business and then hide the body and walk away, like he did with Angel. And how many others?
"He didn't count on..."
Douglas choked.
"Shh, shh."
Ruby put a hand over Edie's ear.
"He underestimated the pair of you. Douglas, I have to put her to bed." Edie was limp on her knee, a weight that seemed heavier. "She's all in," said Ruby. "Can you give me a hand to get her to bed?"
"I'd rather not."
Douglas winced.
"Sorry, I can't."
"Your arm, of course." Her back ached as she carried Edie to her bed, lowered her down next to Percy, and took the eiderdown off her own bed to cover her. In the passage, Douglas was pacing up and down. With each of his steps, it was as though he was walking on her spine. She heard the men's bedroom door close. His footsteps again. As Ruby looked at Edie falling deeper into sleep, a seed of resentment sprouted. It had all been Edie's fault. She stubbed that thought out. Right from the very beginning in 1944, when she was 16 and sneaking out of the social with Lenny, she was to blame. What happened with Stan? That had been fault too. Hadn't she flaunted herself, showing off in front of everybody like a common floozy with her American boy? She'd been hating Mo for trapping her into that sordid world. It wasn't Edie's, but hers. Her own fault. What happened to Angel? And now Frank. And everything in between soaked right through to her soul. Tucking the blankets and the eiderdown under Edie's chin, she left her. Douglas slumped in his armchair in front of the last of the embers in the grate, a suitcase on the floor at his feet. Her veins iced. What's this? He wiped his wet face with his hand. His nose was running, and he passed his knuckle through the mucus.
How can I stay? Where can I sleep? I can't be in there.
Ruby understood. How could he rest with the open wound made by his lover's absence? Stay in our room for a while, Ruby suggested, without thinking. Have my bed. Edie wants me to bunk in with her. He stared, his expression blank, bleak astonishment. In the morning we can talk about it. She wished she could take him into her arms like a child. Did the doctor give you anything?
Penicillin.
His eyes were glassy with tears.
There's other stuff I can take if I wanted it.
Frank's pills. Did men do that sort of thing? She ought to look in Frank's cabinet and see if his assortment of pills was still there. She remained sitting, rubbing her thumb back and forth over the gold wedding ring. I should get you a handkerchief. Douglas hung his head, moving it slowly from side to side like a wounded animal. She'd seen a dog do that in agony after it had been hit by a car. You heard what the doctor said, she urged. I'm supposed to change the bandages. You're meant to rest. Stay, let me look after you. In the face of the raw misery of him, she put an arm over his shoulders, tempted to kiss his head. How clean he smelled. For a second he leaned his head against her. Then he shoved her away. His strength caught her off guard and she reeled, overturning a dining chair and knocking against the table. When she looked up, Douglas's face was a mask.
You, he barked. If it hadn't been for you. I can't stay here. I can't bear to.
He yelped as he stood and bent to lift his suitcase. Ruby broke then. He was stubbing her out. You can't go, she rasped. The doctor said. His shrug was a quiver of pain. Her side hurt where she'd fallen against the table, and she was glad of the pain. She wished he'd hit her, beaten her, but Douglas wouldn't have. If you're going to Arcadia...
I'm not going there.
He lowered his head.
Where?
Ruby tried not to wail.
Don't. Ask me that, he said balefully.
There'll be things to do. A funeral.
He shut his eyes tightly.
What about Edie? She said.
What about her?
The bitterness of his tone lashed her.
She'll be all right. You'll both be all right.
All right?
Ruby stepped toward him.
You really are the living end.
And there's the rub, he sobbed.
You said you'd never leave. It will break her heart.
Well, at least it will all be over all at once, won't it?
He said.
Frank, me. All in one night.
He didn't wipe his tears. Pain weighted her torso. Grief filled her throat. When she opened her eyes, she couldn't see.
She heard him stump up the passage towards the front door. Then he came back.
"Do you know what Frank said to me at the last?"
he croaked from the doorway.
"The love of my life," he said. "Dougie, look after Tink for me." He said that.
She clapped her hands over her face. "Oh, Frank.
Tink. No last word for me."
His sob was almost a scream.
"All this time, I have loved him more than anyone else in the world. And he had no last word for me."
"He loved you," she said. There was nothing to do but let him go. She closed her arms around herself, her hands up her sleeves, for the skin warmth she needed. At the sound of the front door closing, she dug her fingernails into her flesh. The door opened again. A draft reached her.
"I'm sorry about taking the car," he called. I hope you'll be all right."
The latch clicked closed. The doctor's prescription was still on the table. She raced to the door with the damp paper in her hand in time to see the Morris pulling away up the street. In the kitchen, she saw he'd left 3 £10 notes under the teapot. It took all her resolve not to throw them on the fire.
"Damn you, Douglas Woods."
She pulled her unspoken words back in. He'd been damned the moment she got off the train, hadn't he? And she didn't want to wish him any more harm than she'd brought on him already. As incomprehensible as it was, she loved him. The house was dense with silence. Ruby wandered from room to room, alert, listening for something beyond the sound of the clock that ticked on defiantly, proving that time had not come to a standstill. If she opened the clock case and arrested the pendulum, nothing else would stop. The sun would still rise. In the sitting room, the glass of Mrs. Pierce's framed photograph reflected pale light from the open door. She stroked the cold glass and the silver frame with trembling fingers.
"Mrs. Pierce, I'm so sorry. Frank, I've ruined everything."
As she poured herself out, the room seemed less empty. When she had run out of words, she looked again at the grey image and Mrs. Pierce's young, dark, smiling eyes.
"No need to blame yourself, love."
She glanced behind her into the shadows.
"It wasn't anybody's fault."
The warm voice wasn't outside her ears.
"You could even say Frank went the way he wanted."
"That's a terrible thing to say," Ruby said aloud. "It's not true. He loved Douglas too much to leave."
"It's true, it was a little sooner than he intended."
She moved away from the photograph. Was this it? Was this her punishment for everything she'd done? "I'm losing my mind," she told the empty room. "I have to pull myself together. I can't end up going mad. I've come this far for Edie. I have to..."
"You're not going mad, my dear. I admire the strength you have. Frank saw it."
"I'm not strong," she cried.
"That's because of the pain."
"I'm talking to a photograph."
"It's all part of it. I had my husband, Cyril, nagging me for days after he departed, and I hadn't seen him for 10 years. Not a very nice man.
Ruby put her hands over her ears and made for the door, knocking her shins on a nest of tables.
There's something going on in my brain.
The sound of her own voice dispelled the dreadful silence.
I'm in shock. That's what it is. I'll run a bath. Pull myself together.
I would have liked you for a daughter-in-law, if Frank had had that inclination.
Would you?
Ruby's breath caught in her chest.
What a lovely thing to say. Oh, Frank.
She pushed herself into the corner of an armchair, letting herself break into racking sobs into a cushion.
I loved both of them,
she said, without speaking.
I know. Don't you know how much they loved you, too? And Tink?
Douglas hates me. He blames me.
Her mouth filled with the slime-salt taste of tears. Her nose ran, and she had stained the cushion.
He's right. It all comes down to me. My fault.
She swiped tears and mucus away from her face with her hand, as he had done.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Pierce. I've left my hanky.
You'd be surprised how many things don't matter, love.
Douglas has gone,
she mewled.
Douglas is hurting terribly. He blames himself, too.
Why? What for?
I can't stay and chat. Go and have that bath while you can.
You've been listening to A Respectable Veneer, a serialized novel by Rachel Doré, read by Romy Hooper. Listen to the next episode at 8 p.m. next Monday, or for the rest of the series, go to npr.nz/show/respectableveneer, or search for A Respectable Veneer wherever you find your podcasts.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.